and welcome. Legally Brief presents the Child Athlete Abuse Podcast. I'm your host, Judy Saunders. I'm a lawyer, mother, and beyond a survivor. I work with competitive athletes, other survivors, and their families who are confronting abuse. This podcast is for parents, survivors who are fed up, tired of dealing with fear, and searching for answers. This podcast today is one that I want to dedicate to the parents of boys. Most parents and their loved ones are committed to helping children heal from sexual abuse. Each journey is long, it's windy, and it can be complicated. I'm dedicating this episode to those parents who are helping and supporting their boys that are surviving sexual abuse. In our culture, we tell boys to toughen up, don't cry, don't talk. So what can happen is when a boy encounters sexual abuse or other types of abuse, they believe that if they speak out, if they talk about it, it shows weakness, it shows fear, and it shuts them down. On this episode, I'm going to speak with Anthony Segarra. Anthony has been working with young people in the area of sports for years. On this episode, you're going to have the benefit of learning about the complexity and the stigmatism that can be even associated with that term, survivor or victim. You'll also learn how to move, help your child, your boy child, move in a world that judges them and is quick to see individuals as damaged. Anthony's going to give us an insider perspective on some of the positive changes that he's witnessing in his field among coaches and sporting associations. Here's a little bit about Anthony. He currently serves as a strength coach and athletic trainer at XIP Training Systems. He's worked for years previously at Temple University. He spent his formative years as a physical therapist and athletic trainer at New York University. Anthony has worked and understands the NCAA division, and he's worked in a variety of other varsity sports. While I hope that you enjoy the conversation that I have with Anthony, remember that the contents of this podcast or any show should never substitute you reaching out, contacting, and speaking directly to a licensed attorney that knows and understands your unique circumstances. What I tell you on these shows are strictly for informational purposes. Nothing I say creates an attorney-client relationship. If you're looking for past episodes of the podcast, head on over to my website, jsaunderslawfirm.com. While you're there, look around the site. I've put additional information there that can help answer some questions that will speak directly to survivors, to athletes, and to parents. Don't forget to sign up for the firm's monthly newsletter. You do that by subscribing and leaving your name on the website contact page. And if you're ready to speak directly to an attorney, to learn more about your options, call my office. We'll schedule a confidential conversation. You can do that by calling 212-709-8141. And also, important, if something during the conversation or what I've said resonates with you, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment, rate and review, leave a question there. The objective of this show is to make it easy for you to understand the law and move forward beyond that fear and uncertainty. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the conversation I have with Anthony. It is such a pleasure to do this show today. It is going to be a show where we're going to focus on a lot of different areas of abuse, of healing, of hope. It's going to be, you're one of the few male guests that we have on, and that's always a pleasure on the show. We always try to be open and inclusive. So Anthony, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself. I personally didn't want to massacre your last name. So I'm going to have you say your last name and just tell the audience a little bit about you and what you're working on and who you are.
Sure. Thanks, Judy. Sure. My name is Anthony. The last name is Skirza. And there's always a story behind a name like that. So here it goes. So that, you know, phonetically it's spelled S-K-E-R-Z-A, but it's S-G-H-E-R-Z-A. And
yes.
Yeah. And the G was a C when Dad came over to Ellis Island. And they just kept saying, just keep moving forward. So it's a beautiful last name. I'm glad I have it. Thank you for having me. Yeah, a little bit about myself. You know, I like to say I am, and that means I'm present. I'm here today, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. You know, professionally, I have a background in health and human performance. You know, I'm a physical therapist, an athletic trainer, and a strength coach. I'm also an academician or an instructor. I aspire to be a good follower and a good leader.
Excellent.
And I'm a partner, a son, an uncle, a friend.
Excellent.
Yes.
And so, as we were talking about before, right now, we're recording this. You're in one of my, what I consider to be my home base of skiing. You're in Vermont. So
that is correct. Yeah. Yeah. Just, I like to say just north of the Bronx, because I came up here from Brooklyn, and after living in Brooklyn, New York, and to keep my urban sanity, I guess, just saying it's north of the Bronx keeps me in a nice locale.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. We'll allow that. So jumping right in to some of the topics that we're going to discuss, I know you and I, Anthony, have had some great conversations off video. And so what I wanted to talk about first is this whole issue, this dynamic of abuse, the abuse of children, the violation of trust. And I know that as we wind through this conversation, we're going to end in a really great place, a place of hope, a place of understanding that things are getting better, that there are individuals like you out there who are advocating for men and boys. And when I do go back and talk about some of the, when I create the show notes and I create the intro to this show, you know, my intention is to specifically speak to moms of boys, boys and men, because I know that having worked in this space, sometimes it gets overlooked by not everyone, but that's why I'm especially glad to have you on the show. So can you just talk a little bit first about your experience with individuals who violate trust, the cultural norms as you've experienced it in relation to men and boys who are having to endure either physical or emotional abuse? What have you seen as far as those, you know, children? Are they expected to endure more because you're a boy, you're masculine, suck it up? What has been your experience?
Sure. And that's a great start, Judy. And I guess I'll say, you know, my experience, as you use the word healing and hope, and I've been fortunate to be surrounded in the arena of sport where coaches have arrived with love and led with empathy, and where they understood that better people made better athletes. And I understand that that's not always the case. And so I see the arena of sport as a place where boys and men, young men, can have an opportunity to thrive. You know, we have three things that we train. We have an opportunity to train as a strength coach. We can train our bodies, our craft, and our mindset. And that's what happens in sport. Now, you know, I've been around football really for the past 9 years. And, you know, my awareness, acceptance, and my action really, you know, propelled after I completed an academic sabbatical at Penn State back in 2012, 2013. And so that was the time when, you know, it was the time when the Sandusky scandal was being, you know, uncovered. And I needed, when I returned to Vermont in 2013, you know, there were things in my life that presented themselves for me to address the trauma of my past. And now it's given me this opportunity to be part of the solution and be a voice for someone somewhere who may still choose to remain silent. And you're right, you know, that abuse could be physical, emotional, sexual, and it could come in any institution. And the institutions that we've seen historically have been institutions of power. And it could start in the family. But, you know, my abuse took place, the abuse that was perpetrated on me took place in the Catholic Church with the Boy Scouts, sporting organizations. I just mentioned three, but I mean, it's right. Universal. We like to say that it's an equal opportunity offense. And one thing that we have as men that's in common is that we were all children. And so, you know, I've been introduced to this Project ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences. And for me, that serves as a preliminary inquiry onto what may be going on in a child's life that may be having an impact currently. And, you know, those traumas could be what appear to be as micro traumas or, you know, microaggressions, and or they can be on a macro level. And it could be violence. It could be poverty. It could be, you know, any type of bias, racism, bullying, siblings or family members that have been incarcerated. So any of these can have an impact on someone's mental health. And especially now in the time of a pandemic, I think it's becoming more aware of the impact that it has on someone's performance. And I'll probably allude more to the student athlete because that's my, you know, that's the wheelhouse where I've been involved, and it impacts their performance, you know, physically, emotionally, socially, spiritually, intellectually, you know, in relationships.
So let's then tease out and talk specifically about where you're living and the work that you're doing with athletes. And if you could, then you mentioned briefly the scandal, the abuse with the Sandusky case, Penn State. And it seemed as if from what you were saying, that started, or that was going on, you know, it started to come out in 2012. So you were able to bear witness to that in some way. Can you talk to us a little bit about seeing that, take us through that, and now where you're standing now professionally, the changes that you're seeing?
Sure. I will say this, if you don't go and get it, it will come and get you. And so it's quite ironic that I happened to be at Penn State in 2012, 2013, when this scene was unfolding. But at that time, I continued to, you know, unconsciously not uncover, you know, for me, what was done to me. It took a personal experience in a relationship where I needed to look at what my role was in being distant, disengaged, and failing to be present for anyone. And so being in a world of health and human performance, that's where my skill set lies. And so over the course of the past 8 years, you know, after Penn State, I did a summer project at the University of Massachusetts. I was most recently employed at Temple University, and once again, working with their football teams and having my skill set in health and human performance, but being in a room with, you know, 100 young student athletes, I also thought what I saw were the challenges behind the scenes, where I thought that, you know, having these conversations, having this understanding that it's okay to be who you are and to not keep secrets. There's no shame in something that was done to you.
Right.
And so that brought me to really over the past, since I was at Penn State, that brought me to this place of, like I said, wanting to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And right now, you know, I serve as a peer motivational interview for a group of men who have been abused. And so I'm on the other side of the coin. I'm called a peer leader, if you will. I've recently been nominated to serve on the post-traumatic stress guideline development panel for 2021. I'm still awaiting, if anyone's listening to that, I'm still awaiting for the approval or denial. Whatever happens with that is supposed to happen. And so really now I'm in a place of, you know, I'm waiting for my next set of instructions from the universe. You know, I left a position at Temple University in 2020, returned to the private sector up here in Vermont, and putting myself in a position to see where I want to serve next, whether that be in academia, whether that be some combination of academia or on the floor in strength and conditioning, whether that be in the private sector. So I'm open to what my next set of instructions are.
I'm excited for all of those things that you mentioned, especially that post-traumatic. I'll come back to that. I wanted to know if you can speak directly to if there's an athlete, if there's survivor, and we're going to talk about that word survivor. If there's someone listening, I'd love for you to talk directly about that phrase that you just used earlier. And forgive me if I misquoted. If you don't get it, it comes and it gets you.
Sure.
I'd love you to talk about that in the context of when you were there watching the Sandusky scandal unfold. Should they really be in the mindset or thinking, this is something, whatever's happened to me, whatever abuse in whatever form that's taken place, is this something that I should confront head on and not run from, not be ashamed of? Is that what you meant by that quote?
Yes. And I will say this, I'd like to say that I did the way I was supposed to do it, but I dug my heels deeper and deeper when I was at Penn State. It wasn't until I had to hit rock bottom when I returned to Vermont. and really lost everything that was dear to me. I often say this, I kept a secret for 42 years that I was, you know, sexually abused by a wolf in God's clothing. And when you keep a secret for that long, inherently there's an element of shame, and that's assigned to that. And so once I unleashed this shame, it was like chipping away at the chinks of armor. And now I was making the unconscious conscious. I no longer needed to keep a secret. And I came to understand that it wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. And it's never too late to start living your life as you should. You know, that's sort of the message. And oftentimes, and I'm not a psychologist, Judy, by any stretch of the imaginations, but oftentimes the elements of trauma is at the unconscious level. So having an understanding of why you do what you do. You know, my coping strategies, I smile as I say this, were socially acceptable. You know, they were academic achievement and exercise. And it's not uncommon for coping strategies to manifest themselves as not socially acceptable. You know, drugs, alcohol, violence, you know, criminal activity. And sadly, that's when, or perhaps maybe not sadly, you know, if that's the route that someone needs to have an awakening, so to speak, then so be it.
But it sounds like you're saying that trauma needs to manifest itself. It will come out, and in whatever context. And just to be clear to our listeners, you had absolutely nothing to do with the Penn State scandal with that. You just happened to be there. I just want to be 100% clear. You were there on staff.
Kind of, yeah. I just
had nothing to do with that.
I will say this. I will never, and this is before I disclose, I have this great memory of being the Penn State Nebraska game, and it was the first game where Coach Paterno was not there, and they had a moment of silence for all of the children who had been sexually abused. And I was in Beaver Stadium as a fan. And it's certainly sad, but I cried, and I wondered where these tears were coming from. Obviously, it's a sad and traumatic experience. But for the first time, I felt sadness. And I felt sadness not only for others, but for myself. And it took 1 year from that time period, and even greater than that, for me to tell my truth. And once again, I'm a big fan of the universe having my back. And the universe put me at Penn State for a reason. And shout out to a favorite nephew who went to school there. And that's one of the reasons why I chose to complete a sabbatical there.
Awesome. So what we've done so far, Anthony, is that we've shown that there is darkness in these systems. There can be in these institutions. In your case, we haven't directly talked about it, and I don't think that we need to go into a detail. But for the sake of the listener, the abuse that happened to you was sexual in the nature. The perpetrator was within the Catholic Church. Am I stating that correct? Summarizing that correct?
Yes, you are, Judy. And you know, I would like to say I was expertly groomed by a wolf in God's clothing. And when you use the word groomed, the abuse at that point is it's physical, it's emotional, it's social, it's psychological, it's spiritual. And then it was sexual. And then now to bring it back to the world of sport, like, you know, for me, sport is an arena for where I had an opportunity to thrive and where I see as a venue for healing, where I see love for teammates and coaches and people wanting, you know, to become better versions of themselves on so many levels, physically, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, and in their craft. And that's what really speaks to me because, you know, I've had the very good fortune to be surrounded by coaches at these institutions, at Penn State, the University of Massachusetts, and Temple University, who were kind, compassionate, loving human beings, where in another institution, I did not receive that, so to speak.
Right.
If that happens to be my skill set as an athletic trainer and a strength coach and a physical therapist and an academician, you know, can I serve in that population to be part of the solution for someone, you know, or to walk side by side with someone else on their life journey, really? That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a life journey. Very few people come out of this, merry-go-round, as I like to say, unscathed, right?
Yes.
And I like to say, you know, what was actually done to me was done for me at this point in my life. And that's how it's been reframed.
That's one of the reasons why I was so looking forward to this conversation, because I knew that you could speak directly to and validate the darkness that you found through that individual, that authority figure who violated your trust, who groomed you, but then you found hope in sports. Conversely, I've had instances in the work that I do where, unfortunately, I have seen darkness within competitive youth sports. And my work is part of that, is to spread hope, shed light. Before we go to talking about the more hopeful side and what you've seen really positive coaching, can you talk to listeners about the length of time it took you to disclose, why it took so long? And specifically, I'm thinking about when in my work, either speaking to parents, speaking to witnesses, or speaking to a jury, there is always that knee-jerk reflexive action. Well, it can't be true, or the person would have said it, or they would have talked about it. And even the survivor themselves, they may begin to doubt the incident really happened because they can't talk about it. They can't speak it out loud. Can you tell the general public, talk to the athletes, or in any case, in a survivor, about why, for you, disclosing, fully talking about it, why that was so difficult?
Sure. And here's how I frame that narrative. As I understood it, the research suggests that the average length of time that someone comes to disclose is greater than 20 years. The average age for a male is 52. I jokingly say that I guess I'm just average. That was a time when I, you know, came forward. And I'm trying to speak from my child's perspective, right? From my inner child's perspective.
Please.
And you're right. You know, the lies become your truth. No one will believe you. You know, you don't have, no one will believe you. And there's obviously shame assigned to that. So for me, I needed to lose everything. I needed to, you know, my father had passed away. My mom was in a state of mind where she was not aware, and my wife left me. And so I needed to lose everything in order for me to have an understanding of what the impact of my past was now having on my present. What was my role? And my role was this unconscious holding on to something that was really not mine. You know, I was holding on to the shame. I was holding on to the fear. I was holding on to the anxiety and the unworthiness where it wasn't mine. I needed to put it back on where it was. And so for me, and I'd like to say, like, you know, I have a great circle of women and men, and women have paved the road for men to move forward. You know, in the 70s and 80s, it might have been different. But now, you know, what I would say is to any person who is currently in a situation where they think is inappropriate or not right, is that you have a voice. You're not alone. Something's not your fault. Have a conversation. And that's where the world of sport, where I've seen the governing bodies now moving forward this understanding of, we have people in authority now that are well-versed to speak with. They may not be professional ears and not be psychologists, but they are a person who is willing to assist. And these governing bodies now have anti-discrimination policies, anti-harassment policies, sports psychologists, and coaches who have an open door policy, and let's have a conversation. Because if you read the newspapers, you know where that in the institution of sport, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, and I'm not pointing fingers at any of those institutions. I'm just identifying what, you know, I've read, and there are countless others, I suspect. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, the intention of this is to have others have a voice, to give a voice, to shine light on darkness.
Right.
That shouldn't be in the darkness. We said this in a previous conversation, like, you know, evil has an opportunity to persist when good people choose not to speak.
Absolutely. When they don't speak. So, and that's what we're doing. We are speaking today, which
thank you, for
you are
that.
Giving us a great segue into. Take us now in your professional experiences that you've had and give us something to be hopeful about, Anthony. You know, I'll tell you just by way of brief story. When I was a young attorney and first started to practice, I was prosecuting crimes against children. And so we're talking about the murder, the rape of children, the neglect, some of the stories. I remember being just emotionally, physically exhausted by that. And so that's the darkness. So I am looking for you to now, from your experience, give us a reason to be hopeful. What are you seeing with coaches now? You know, it's no longer, we're not in the 80s, we're not in the 90s, we're, you know, 2021. What are you seeing that coaches are doing? What are you seeing the organizations that you're working with?
Sure. And I'll go right to governing bodies that I'm associated with. They include in the National Strength and Conditioning Association, the Collegiate Strength and Conditioning Coaches Association, then the NCAA. They all have, you know, policies, bylaws, and procedures for reporting, for having a conversation. The NCAA has a sports science institute that now addresses, you know, like we said, the physical, emotional, and mental arena. I see a willingness. I see an openness, I see honesty, openness, and a willingness to have these conversations. And that's inviting and attractive. I see open door policies. And as I started with the, you know, in the first part of our conversation, I see love. And once again, I'll go back to, I've been very the good fortune of surrounding myself with incredible strength coaches and who started with love and led with empathy while holding people accountable to a task at hand that one might also consider violent and abusive. And I'm talking about, you know, contact sport. You know, we came in contact by virtue of Michael Stedman, a plug for Ironbound Boxing and the great work that he's doing over there. And, you know, we had this conversation, this paradox of a person imposing their will on another person. And that could be in the boxing ring, that could be in the football field. But for me, the beauty behind it is that it's respected. It comes from a place of love. It comes from a place of trying to carrying the fire of what it is that we're both trying to achieve, and that is becoming better versions of ourselves.
And for context, you were talking about, so the listeners know, Mike Stedman, Iron Mike, really, really great activist, entrepreneur. I encourage my listeners to check out his show, A Native Son. But Mike actually runs a nonprofit out of Newark, teaching children entrepreneurial skills, boxing skills, and that's how you and I connected. But going back to what you were saying that even in these highly physical contact sports, you're seeing from where you're standing as a strength and conditioning professional, that even in these contact sports, that there is room for empathy. There is room for open conversation and transparency. Is that what you're seeing?
That is quite correct. And, okay, and you know, it's interesting because oftentimes it's not scripted. You know, it happens on the fly, if you will, or it happens in a comment or a conversation. And these types of sports are emotional games. And having those emotions or sitting with those emotions is an important part of the healing process. And oftentimes, and you and I spoke about this, you know, we present with this toxic mask of masculinity. And I may use one swear word. It's not going to be that bad of a swear word. But, you know, I've seen a lot of people who are badass by bringing humility as part of their strength. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, oftentimes anger is fear in a leather jacket.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you present as angry all the time, well, you know, it's a healthy emotion, but might you really identify why you are angry? And so to answer the question, yeah, there is a lot of hope and healing in a weight room, in a locker room, on the field of combat, you know, in the boxing ring.
So, Anthony, I think that you stand in a really advantageous position. A lot of our listeners are parents, they're athletes. They're not either. They're in the point where they're just looking at colleges. They're thinking about colleges. You are a survivor of sexual abuse. And now you have come through this journey. And now you're sitting in the area of competitive collegiate sports. Can you tell maybe even one or two characteristics that mom, dad, athlete should look for when they're considering a collegiate program, this highly competitive, maybe it's a contact sport? What should they be looking for in their coaches, in the athletic program, in the conditioning? What should they look for? What should they be aware of? Anything come to mind?
Sure. Authenticity, love, a genuine concern for the person prior, you know, once again, good coaches will know that better people make better athletes. And so having a, you know, a compassionate, kind, and genuine concern for who this child is as a person before they, you know, how well they can hit a ball or shoot a free throw. Having honest, open, and willing conversations. If an adult is, you know, parents are looking at who's coaching their children, you know, and I think there are governing bodies out there. The United States Center for Coaching Excellence is another governing body that is really educating coaches in the, for the 21st century to be loving, kind, compassionate, empathetic, and victorious at the same time. Like, you can do both. You can have both. You don't have to. You can, quote unquote, win the right way or be victorious the right way.
I'll ask you the opposite to that question. Let's flip the coin here, so to speak. And you're considering a program. You're looking at different collegiate programs. Are there any one or two warning signs, you know, that parents or athletes should look out for? Anything jump to mind? Someone that could be masquerading as being authentic. Is there anything, any signs an athlete should be aware of?
That's a great question. I think there's an element of intuition that plays a role here. And college athletes, children, teenagers, young adults, they're very smart and they can see beyond a mask. And so I would say, listen to your inner voice, listen to your intuition, be true to yourself. You know, and we also say this because oftentimes you see coaches move forward and, you know, not necessarily go to a program because of who's recruiting you. You go to a program because it's the institution where you want to be and where you feel comfortable and where you feel a warm space where you can thrive. We also say, you know, go where it's warm. Go where you feel warm. Go where you feel welcomed and a part of rather than apart from. And that's essentially the advice I would give. I don't have children, but I think
that's excellent advice. I love to tell the story to my kids or whomever when they're asking me a question. And I always talk about I don't know if it's the deer or the gazelle and the African, you know, Serengeti, and it stops, it freezes, and it senses the danger. And humans are the only animals that we will talk ourselves out of the danger. We'll say, oh, this really isn't happening, but the gazelle just moves. It knows the instinct, knows the intuition, and leaves. And then, of course, you know, the camera will pan over and see the lion waiting to pounce. So I think that that is timely, relevant, and never will lead you wrong. The intuition, don't ignore it, that nagging feeling, that inner voice, and also go where it feels warm, the entire program, and not just, you know, the lights and the smoke and mirrors. I'd love to just hit on the word that I use, that we all use, it's in our common vernacular, of a survivor and being labeled a survivor and talking now to, you know, the athletes themselves, what that label brings, the emotions it can conjure up. Is there shame with it? I'd love to just discuss that for a moment and how a person that's coming through or going through this journey, how they can think of themselves and so that they can continue to thrive. What do you personally think about that word survivor?
Sure. I think it's a necessary word, but I also think if you just finish the sentence, you know, so, you know, can you move from surviving to thriving? And somewhere in between, you know, there's a made up word, surthriver, if you will, if you're somewhere in between.
I like that.
Or cyclically moving back and forth. And, you know, it's interesting. The other word I struggle with for me personally is the word victim. And these days it's framed as I was victimized. I'm no longer a victim. I was victimized. And now, you know, the light is shining on me and I will finish the story. But no doubt, you know, the word survivor carries with it. There still exists the stigma of having been sexually abused. It's a falsehood. It's a myth.
Yeah.
And it's a myth that I could have done something for myself. It was my fault and I didn't do enough. And so when I think of the word survivor, I sort of go back to that stigma because it carries with it the less than stronger parts of where I currently am. And that is being on the other side of that fence, which is being part of the solution and not part of the silence.
Do you think that that word survivor, I've attached it, you know, it's in the intro to my podcast. I've attached it to different parts of my life. It's on my website because of my experience. Do you think that that word survivor draws us in, those of us who have gone through different experiences, no matter what it's been, physical, emotional? Do you think it draws us into the quote unquote incident, the crime, the act? Do you think that it doesn't give us separation?
That's a powerful question.
I don't know. And I don't know. Maybe we don't even answer it. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm just thinking.
I love the question. I will say this. And we had this conversation, Judy, and that was like I immediately feel safe in your presence because we have a shared life experience. Mm-hmm. If that word brings us into a circle, that's beautiful. Okay. But then understanding that for me, I can leave that circle. And still use, like you said, my intuition as to, it's a dangerous world out there, but there's also a lot of love and a lot of safety out there. And right. So, you know, coming into a place where I have that healthy understanding.
Two yeah. things I want us to, two more topics, this one and another one before we end. Can you talk to athletes, talk to parents, again, along this same concept of being a survivor, who may not speak out, who may recoil at that word because they don't want to be considered quote unquote damaged. They don't want the new collegiate teammates. They don't want new coaches to know. Can you talk to them a little bit about that, or what can be said about that, if anything?
Sure. And once again, I can speak from my experience, and I want to make myself all. This is probably one of the more challenging things I have done in my entire life. When we hang up, I am not going to tell you not to release this. And that means it's going to go public. And that means anyone who hears this has an opportunity to use it however they want to. And that's scary. But I understand that, and it works for me, I'm choosing to be part of the solution. I'm choosing to be part of the voice. And others may choose not to be. And that's okay too. So I can understand. And, you know, in some books that, you know, you don't have to be on a podcast. You don't have to be the torchbearer, if you will. And I don't feel like I am, but I feel like I'm moving forward in that direction to be a little less cautious about how I choose to share this narrative because I didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't my fault. And now I have what I feel is a skill set that I can help, that I can be a servant leader somewhere and somehow. And while understanding people who choose not to do this, and because as many individuals that there are in the world, there are that many individuals who choose to share their story or not. Just one quick thing that's coming to my mind. You know, I was at the U.S. Naval Academy Leadership Conference just recently, and Charlie Plum spoke, and Captain Charlie Plum, and he wrote the book, I'm No Hero. And Captain Plum was in captivity for a very long time, you know, in Vietnam. And, you know, just the title of the book, I'm No Hero. I mean, he's utilized his experience, his traumatic experience that I can't imagine, for a place of goodness and growth and healing. And so that drives me. But I also understand those who choose to, I hopefully don't think they're hiding from their self. I wouldn't suggest that this be kept a secret. It's not a secret. No trauma should be a secret. You know, where it said you're only as sick as your secrets, talk to someone and see where it takes you. And that someone could be a friend, a parent, a coach, a counselor, a member of an organization where you feel safe.
Right.
So I think that addressed the question.
It does. That's powerful. What I got from that, I got so many things. I got chills for one, but it's powerful in that you are athletes, survivors. You're not damaged. You are doing what you need to do to heal, whether that's speaking out, whether that's being so vulnerable, so opening like you're doing, Anthony, whether it's, you know, attaching my name to the word survivor. We're doing what we believe needs to be done at this point. And neither by speaking or by not speaking should ever consider yourself damaged. So I think that you hit it right where and what need to have been said. I'd love for you to share some of the, we had spoken about just some of the organizations that men and boy athletes can connect with. And I'd love one, if you could tell a little bit about this. I believe it was called malesurvivors.org. Was that one of the organizations? And I'll put all these in the show notes. But just if you can talk about that.
Sure. You know, on my My Healing Journey, MaleSurvivor.org, MenHealing.org, OneIn6.org.
Yes, One in Six was another one, yes.
Yeah, that represents the number of men who report having been sexually abused before the age of 18. And then I have to, you know, and this is for young men and or actually for anyone. There's a book out there called Victims No Longer by Mike Liu. And that book has served as a foundation and a game changer for when I disclosed back in 2013, knowing that, you know, you are not alone. Other people are sharing this experience. You think you're alone and you're not. And so having those conversations and you can be thinking you're alone if you are being bullied. And, you know, once again, I go back to the big picture of adverse childhood experiences. As young, as women and men, we have one common bond. Well, we have humanity as our common bond,
right.
But we were all children at once. We were all children at once at some time in our lives. Perhaps healing those childhood wounds that went unspoken, if you will, that builds the strength. And, you know, I've seen strength, you know, in my world, you know, strength is identified by what you can squat, bench, and deadlift, right? But also the strength that I've seen being in a circle of someone telling the truth, their truth, mm-hmm. is equally as powerful or just
that.
As powerful.
I love that we ended on that. The strength is not only in what you can bench lift, but in the truth. I mean, come on, you couldn't have ended on a better note than that, Anthony. I am going to put these resources, the One in Six. I actually checked out that website. It looked really amazing, really proactive, and some of the other resources. So for our boys and men athletes, for the boys of moms, I'd rather mom boys or however we say it. I have two boys myself. So I know that, you know, this, what we talked about, a lot of things we talked about speaks directly to that and to, you know, wherever you are in this journey. Thank you so much for spending this time. Thank you for being so open and so honest. Anything else that I always end with this, anything else I'm forgetting to ask that you wanted to add that you think the listeners should know could help them, you know, find the way, tell their truth, however, open to quietly to someone else. Anything else you wanted to add?
Sure. I would like to say thank you and thank you for your voice, for who you are, what you do. You are the light in this world and on this topic. From the deepest depths of my heart, I really appreciate you having me have this conversation with you. You are not alone.
Yeah.
So to the audience, you are not alone. And so there's always someone there that to escort you on a life journey.
That's so
go find
important.
That person.
That's so the truth. And for whatever light or small light I can be on someone's journey, someone did the same for me. So I'm doing it in the circle. All right. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Be well.
All information and content in this podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. Nothing in this podcast shall constitute legal advice and shall not create an attorney-client relationship. This information is general and may not be applicable to your particular circumstances. You should review your particular circumstances with an attorney. All liability with respect to actions taken or not taken based on the contents of this podcast is hereby expressly disclaimed.